You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This is episode number 26 of Living the Dream with Rory O'Malley. If you like the podcast, remember to subscribe, rate, and review.
Audition, side job, swimming upstream. Believe it or not, you're living the dream.
Hey dreamers, Rory O'Malley here. Thank you for listening to Living the Dream. My guest today is my pal, David Hull. He is a series regular on Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, everyone's favorite musical theater TV show. It is so much fun. If you haven't watched it, you should be watching it. Go binge that shit. It is great. Rachel Bloom, who created it, is so funny, and Dave plays White Josh, and he's so funny on it. I've known him for a really, really long time, since we were at the Goodspeed Opera House. He was in High Button Shoes. I was in Happy Days, the musical. This was over 10 years ago, so I've known him for a long time, and have got to see him go from being in the chorus of Broadway shows to being a series regular on a TV show. I'm so impressed with how he approaches the business and how he got himself from the chorus and into a TV show. He's been in New York. He's been in Los Angeles. He loves Los Angeles public transportation. This was a really fun conversation for me. It was great to get to catch up with him. I think you'll really enjoy his story. Here you have it. Here is David Hull. So you're in LA, right?
I am. Yeah. Yeah. We're working on, Insecure, the show on HBO right now. Have you seen, did you watch season one?
Yeah. And I've seen both episodes you're on and, believe I want to know everything.
I hope you were holding on to your hat for my groundbreaking performance.
It was phenomenal, and just the fact that you're like in her presence.
I know,
because she is everything.
She really is, and she really carries herself like you feel like you're in the presence of greatness when you're around
right.
her, for sure. And she runs a really fucking cool ship too, because everyone's like really hungry for civil conversations and
right.
discussing the political landscape, and the show obviously tackles a lot of that, so it's cool to be around for sure.
I'm sure this is the second show that you are on that is led by an amazing woman,
strong
first
women.
Being Crazy Ex-Girlfriend.
Yeah, exactly.
Rachel Bloom, who is
a force,
another genius.
Man. Yeah, she's a beast. She's really just done her own thing with just disregarding any industry standard or
you are White Josh.
I am White Josh. That is correct.
which is the greatest character name
I agree.
Ever. And I'm actually shocked that there is a character with the name White in it, and it's not played by me, because I thought I had
the white market
actually,
locked down.
I'm the whitest person who ever walked the planet.
That is true, and I'm sorry to have snagged that role right from
thanks a lot.
Out from under you. I'm sorry.
So one of the reasons that I am so excited to talk with you is because your story over the last few years and how you got to where you are is so amazing, and I feel is I've been really lucky to get to kind of peripherally watch you just make a decision. I really feel like you just decided to do this.
That's, I think and you're maybe giving me more credit than I deserve.
Well, I'm not. I'm giving you some credit here is what, and I think it's the credit you deserve because I remember, you know, you were in the ensemble of Wicked understudying Fear.
Yeah.
You were in Book of Mormon for a little bit.
Yeah,
you like just crossed paths.
I know. I missed you.
Yes. And you were in How to Succeed.
Yes. Yep.
As well. And you were in that Broadway ensemble understudy.
Yeah.
Track.
Yeah. I probably could have chilled there for a while too. It's obviously a very fun world and obviously super exciting and it's nice to, everyone makes TV versus stage comparisons all the time, but one of them I think is you rehearse and you form this family and then when you, right. even the shortest gigs last 3 months or something and these sorts of things, you can feel like sort of a part of the community, but you maybe work one day a month or, you know. 2 days a month
right.
and you never, you know, see those people again. So it's a, it
you
is,
don't have that same bond.
Right. Right. In some cases you do. And Crazy Ex is an exception to that rule for sure, because everyone is just like a theater weirdo and wants that community, wants that.
Doesn't know how else to be.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So that is a little bit redeeming there. But I think the only reason I was doing a play that came out here, Vanya and Sonia and Masha and Spike.
And you were Spike.
I was Spike, the mind-numbing lunatic that was originated by Billy Magnuson and all of his insanity.
Right.
So, really tricky shoes to step into, actually. So, I wasn't feeling particularly secure or confident. I'm sure that that's an undercurrent for most people's stories. But even in times when it seems like you're doing well, it is tricky to feel like you have very much confidence or that you're doing
yeah,
very well.
Like you're out of your element.
Yeah, you know, totally.
You went to University of Michigan for musical theater,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I did.
So, you know, like, you know where to go when you show up to New York.
Right.
And you're auditioning
character
for
character shoes in
roles.
Hand. Yeah, exactly right.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. For sure.
You basically went to Los Angeles with a play. But I even remember you making this conscious effort before that because I passed you on the street and you were like, I'm doing plays now.
Yeah, like, I was doing that bit for a while where I was like, I do plays now. I'm a straight play actor.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah. And you did it. You know,
yeah.
Like you really kind of were like, you decided to set a focus and say, and you probably had to kind of walk away from some stuff too.
Yeah, I did. There was kind of a weird moment. I got, actually, this is a testament to my buddy Paul Kaleza, who was the playwright for the first play that I did, and he just really, really wanted me for that play. And they were kind of trying to stunt cast it a little bit, and obviously you don't just want some chorus boy. I get that. And it was tricky, and I had to audition probably 6 or 7 times and go through the ringer and have these work sessions with the director and get told no, and then they'd have another round, and then they'd have me back. And Paul just really, really believed in me, so he met with me, and he worked with me, and he gave me that burst of confidence that eventually did get me that show. And I had gotten something else to swing something else at the same time. And so it was one that I knew was going to run for a long time, and it was going to be a lot of money, or I could do this weird off-Broadway play that's going to make me no money, less than unemployment, but is a really fun weird, terrifying enterprise. So I ended up doing that as a pretty significant risk. And it turned me on so much. I loved it so much. And I always like going to work. I've always sort of been that kind of like dumb who just hop around and do whatever comes up. And I'm fine. I'll be fine. I'm not I was never dissatisfied. But that was one of the first times that I was like, oh, this is what it feels like to love clocking in every night,
right.
to really, really get turned on by the idea of going to work. And I think that was kind of when I decided that a shift might be in order.
Right. You exercise a different muscle and all of a sudden you're
totally.
Like, oh, that's a whole new world.
Yeah. And it's terrifying. It really is. And there's, you know,
yeah,
there's nothing nothing quite so scary as feeling that exposed and all of your faults are on display. And it's just you. There's something really lovely about being in the chorus because you can just, you can have your strong nights, you can have your off nights, and the thing still works because it's not really on your shoulders, but...
Right. I mean, you're carrying the show as a team.
Right. Exactly. Just, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. No, it's a lot more fun and in a lot of ways, but...
Oh, it's so fun. I do miss that. Of, I do miss that bad. I mean, you were in Mormon, yeah. You know what that's
yeah.
like. It's
yeah.
so fun.
Yeah. And now I'm in Hamilton and I'm by myself all
oh,
the
yeah.
time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I didn't really think about that. Yeah. You don't really get to interact with almost anybody.
No. No,
on stage, especially
I'm on stage, I'm by myself, and
yeah.
you know, then I come off stage, and they all run back on.
Right, right.
I'm in solitary confinement. It's all right. back to you.
Yeah.
But yeah. So you make this you go out and you do this play, and it really excites you. You. Pretty quickly, was it that you got Vanya, Sonia, Masha, and Spike. And that took you to Los Angeles? How did you get to LA? Because I think that's one of the biggest difficult decisions for New York actors, especially when you do have something that's really good.
And, yeah.
You know, connections. Like a lot of people go to LA and they're like, ugh, I have things happening in New York.
Yeah, I had one of those bouts actually. And I can't remember why I came out or when I came out. I think it was before... Really, Really, because right after Really, Really was when Mormon asked me to come in. So I went back into Mormon for a little bit. And then while I was doing Mormon, I got Vanya. And that's right. what pulled me out out west this last time. But I had done this once before where I made that pilot season go of it that so many sure. of the New Yorkers have done. And it felt horrible. And this town is so weird, as everyone knows. And
yeah. I just call pilot season rejection season.
Totally. And it's
like rejection just in case season, you're feeling good about yourself, right, come on out to LA.
Right. And it's rejection season if you
winter.
Couldn't even get seen for anything, which was, yeah. you know, I couldn't get seen for anything. So I basically just came out here and sat in solitary confinement, as you say, for
yeah.
a couple months and then limped back to New York and hoped that someone would hire me again. And I did that once before. And I don't remember what inspired me to do that. I think I was maybe just between jobs, and I had a friend who had an apartment, so it seemed like something I could do to kill some time. I don't know that it felt right. especially impassioned. But then when I did Vanya, and I had an 8-show week out here, and I had a little community, and I had something that resembled our experience in New York, it all became a lot more palatable to me. And obviously... going to a few auditions and not getting a call back or not having any interest is all softened by the fact that I had a show to go do that night. So at the end of the day,
right.
it was a lot more palatable that go round. And then it was right after that I started working on the show, The Middle, this sitcom, The Middle.
All right.
And just a few episodes.
Patricia Heaton.
That's right.
From Cleveland, Ohio, my hometown.
Yes, she is. She's like a diehard Cleveland sports fan, too.
Yes, she is.
Last year, Believeland, it was mayhem there at those stages, I'm told.
Yeah.
But I just did a couple episodes of it, but that was really the sort of like getting your feet wet moment that made me think I could maybe do that for a little bit and sit tight. It's funny, because I don't really ever remember having a moment where I was like, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to make a go of it. Like I feel like a lot of people have that sort of high-minded forethought, and that never really was my plan. I think I'm just kind of one of those guys. I think I'll just do whatever's
what
in front
next?
Of me. Yeah, kind of.
What's in front of you?
That might be strength, it might be a weakness. But
at a certain point, when you've been... around long enough, you realize that's what you have to do. You only have so much control. So
right. I think that is where that comes from. You might be right.
Yeah. But you definitely were like the other side of that is you have to take the chance. You know,
right.
you have to take the audition. You have to put the work in and you have to decide like, no, I can do this. And nobody can do that for you. You know,
right.
like that thing of you feeling like not comfortable being out of your element,
right.
you were the only one who can really kind of push through that.
Yeah.
And I feel like there was a moment where you just did.
It's also about listening not to get too ridiculous, but about listening to the universe and finding the signs. And I think at that point, it would have been a really tricky task for me to go back to New York after Vanya, because I had a really cheap, fully furnished apartment out here. I had let my apartment go in New York. Everything was in storage.
Right.
It felt like I was going against the grain to try and get back there. And even though that probably was the more reasonable course of action, I just sort of rode the wave a little bit and saw where it took me. And,
yeah,
you know, money's an issue and all these things are issues. And I realized that not everyone is in a position to be able to do that. But there, you know, there's always a way. There's always a method. And
you were finding ways even to stay in LA. You've always worked any job that you've needed to.
Talking about my janitor job, right?
I am talking about whatever you want to
I'm
talk about.
I'm very proud of my janitor actually, job because I like, am head janitor now. So
that's amazing.
Thank you.
When I saw you in LA, and when I saw, like, you are making this happen. You know what I mean?
Yeah. When
like
I saw you at Comedy Cellar?
Yes.
I remember that.
The Comedy Store.
Comedy Store. Excuse me.
When you were, yes, but you were in LA.
Pauly Shore, right? How could I forget?
Yes, yeah, Pauly Shore.
The legendary Pauly Shore, my number one icon, idol.
There you go.
Yeah. Very familiar with the Pauly Shore canon.
Yes, of course. Mm-hmm. When I saw you there, because you were supporting me in my stand-up comedy in Los Angeles, which was very generous of you.
That was not generous. That was generous of you to share those stories with me. That was fucking hilarious.
But, you know, I was like, dude, you are doing this. You're doing it. And you're gonna, and I could see that you were like, I'm gonna make this happen. And you're not like crazy ambitious about it. It's not like, but you know, that's what I'm saying. Like, you were taking work to stay in LA. And I think that so many people don't want to have that conversation. Like, you know, that you don't need to feed yourself in the meantime between.
Yeah. And it sucks. Days. I mean, I was 30 already. It's like, what, you know, at that point it feels like starting over again, and not that 30 is over the hill or anything, but it does feel like I should be an adult. I should at least not be, you know, taking side gigs to try and make rent. But you know, it's
but
all.
Damn it! If you're gonna make it happen, you have to.
Exactly.
You know.
Yeah.
Like,
exactly. And that's just, the fun of it. That's a fun journey. I think. I don't know. I think that a lot of people are so focused on whatever that end result might be that they have imagined for themselves, and I mean, as cliche as it is, you kind of miss the ride of it all. And, you know, the most successful people we know are still on that ride. You know, no one has arrived anywhere. No one has any satisfaction. No one feels like, oh, I've done it and now I'm done. It's always insecure about what's coming next, insecure about the thing you've just done to see how it's responded to. And, you know, it's always kind of uncertain, always. So, you know, idealizing this one end result is short-sighted, I think. So I think you're right. Finding some joy in the ride of it and letting it play out however it's going to play out, not trying to fight it too aggressively. I mean, you have to make decisions. You have to control your path a little bit, but you also have to listen to the world around you.
Right. You have to it's a balancing act.
Yeah.
But I think that you had already gone through that period of time in your 20s when you go to New York and you have to, like, you know what it takes to put yourself into a city, into an industry and not have any guarantees and be scared as hell. And then you
and
did
nothing
it again.
Is so ruthless as New York, obviously.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah, LA does seem less daunting after doing that in New York. The first time I moved to New York, I was trying to drop out of college after my freshman year. I was gonna move to LA actually, and I had some fight with the girl I was dating at the time, and I ended up going to New York, she ended up going to LA. And in New York, I think someone from the theme park I worked at when I was 16 had taken a job at a regional theater, and their apartment in Queens was sitting empty, and I was like, I don't have your $700 rent, but I could possibly scrape together two or three if it's just going to sit there empty. And he agreed to it. So I was trying to make like a $300 rent. I was working two retail jobs in Soho. I was interning at a talent agency on a couple days off. I had bed bugs at one point. It was the summer of the brownouts. I don't know if you remember the rolling brownouts in New York. It was so hot. It was horrible.
I think that was 2003.
2003. That's it. And then I was doing this one waffle with applesauce for breakfast, one waffle with applesauce for dinner. That was all I ate, basically. This was all I could afford. And I ran kicking and screaming back to college. I was like, take me to my safe space. I missed the pillowy undergraduate experience. So I ended up
in Ann Arbor.
In Ann Arbor. Beautiful. The fucking Ann best. Arbor. Man, what a great place.
What was your college experience like after you decided to stay?
It was kind of weird, actually. I didn't have any training, really, when I was growing up. So I was definitely, I was working against a bit of a deficit. And I really took to this one professor. Her name was Linda Goodrich. She ended up being my mentor and one of my best friends. She's still one of my best friends. Talk to her all the time. She's a wonderful human being, and she saw something in me that a lot of other people didn't, so she kind of took me under her wing, and she taught dance, but she was also a director, so she was sort of, you know, creatively inclined and really interested in storytelling, and so she started letting me assist her as director and choreographer, so I sort of took on that path, and once I did that, the other stuff felt a little less daunting, kind of, because it was coming from a storytelling place in my brain for some reason. And she really just, that was what clicked for me. She really turned everything around for me. And then she was the one who hired me for my first tour, the Kids Bop concert tour. Not sure if you're familiar with Kids Bop with a Z. It's
wait, is that where they do all the pop hits?
Sure is. But, for PG audiences, sure is. We played at least five towns, and they were beautiful towns. Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, I remember, was one of them. Schenectady, maybe, something like that.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
What is this tour? Yeah. Like, you just go to the small towns?
So, they were doing it as like a test to see if it was the sort of thing that could have a broader audience, and then it would maybe go on an arena tour like a Disney on Ice or something and try and make some real money. But it didn't. Buck stopped with us in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. So, but anyway, she hired me for that. She hired me for the first job I did out of school, which was high button shoes at the Goodspeed Opera House. Not sure if you're familiar. Turn of the century, Julie Stein.
I was there. Do you remember that?
Oh my God, that's right. Of course. Yeah. Happy Days.
I was doing Happy Days, the musical.
How could I forget, with Felicia Finley?
Yes.
She lived downstairs for me.
We were doing high button shoes. Uh-huh.
Oh, that's right. I forgot. Yeah, so I was doing that, and then it was when I was doing that I got the Wicked tour, and I remember getting that call and being like, wait, what? I get to be in Wicked? Are you kidding me?
Wow.
This was in like 2007, so it wasn't brand new, but it was new enough that it was like,
yeah,
holy
and it
shit.
Came out when you were in college, so it was
totally,
like a show.
Totally, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Man, theater's fun. I mean, theater.
Remember that?
Remember
that theater?
Yeah.
Mr. Hollywood?
Oh, please.
So you went on tour with Wicked.
Yeah.
You had a good experience.
Yeah. And I jumped right from that
tour. How long were you on tour?
I was out there for a year and a half. And I got the Chorus Line tour when I was doing that. So I went back out on tour immediately. And as Wicked was going west to play all the Western Seaboard, the Chorus Line tour was coming east. So I then, for another year and a half, played the exact same towns I had just played. I had the same dressers in every city. It was so weird. It was like Groundhog Day. Wow. It was very strange, but really, really cool. And I felt like I got to know those cities pretty well. We ended up going to Japan on that tour. That was awesome.
Wait, yeah. So you're a great dancer. You said that going to where did you get your dance training? Like you went into University of Michigan with no dance training? Or
yeah, what? Yeah. Well,
wow.
I say that I. When I was in high school, I got a job at the local theme park, which is called Kings Island. Yeah, well, you're a northerner, so...
The monster.
You're
we
more
have
of
Cedar
a Cedar Point,
Point
guy.
So yeah, no, we have the better theme park,
okay,
is
well,
what you're
trying
to say. Yeah, yeah, I get it.
Maybe some better roller coasters, possibly worse for entertainment. we had some stunning performances. I don't know if you know anything about my theme park days, Rory, but I was very good.
I have no doubt.
Pop and country reviews five times a day in the sweltering Southern Ohio Valley heat.
No doubt.
There was one show. It was called Graveyard Shift. And it was coming on the tail end of... do you remember Universal Studios used to have this Beetlejuice Rock review with, like, you know, the Bride of Frankenstein and other classic Universal monsters.
Uh-huh.
Well, King's Island, which was then affiliated with Paramount, wanted to capitalize on some of the success of that show, so they created their own version of that show, but with none of the licensed monsters. So it was just sort of a graveyard-themed monster show, but in just May, June, July, just during the summer. And we didn't have any real monsters, so it was... Who was Dr. Funkenstein, who's like the Frankenstein character, just fully ripping that off.
Just knock off.
Scare, Queen of the Fright, who was Cher, but also Whitney Houston, I guess, because of Queen of the Night.
Wait, what?
Yeah, Scare.
Cher.
Scare.
Scare.
Queen of the Fright, you see. You see how clever that is?
My goodness.
Yeah. And then I played Patch. I was pieced together with lots of the body parts of other dead creatures. After the first number, they threw all the body parts into a tomb and then cast some sort of spell and then created me, my second number arrival, real star entrance, I think. I was Patch, and I sang, I get knocked down, and then Dr. Funkenstein said, I dig him up again. You see? You see how good that is? And then the chorus came on and said,
brilliant.
Stitching the night away, night away. And that little interlude.
Stitching the night
with
away.
With huge cartoon-like needles with thread hanging off of them. The dancers doing, like, you know, bop-mas and stuff. It was very good. And then my love interest, Medusa, who is just from mythology. Not,
of course. Not no monster. Copyright there.
You can say that one all you want.
Definitely past the 100
And she
years.
Had those little plastic... snakes from party bags in her wig. Oh, and I had a Billy Idol wig and a Britney mic. It was wonderful.
Do you have pictures
of this? Oh, I'm sure I do. Yeah,
I'm. You're after this, please.
Oh, yeah.
I want to see Patches.
Yeah, you're gonna need to see those.
So what you're saying here is that you got all your dance training
as
from
Patch.
Patches
from Patch.
Great. I mean, that makes so much sense.
Yeah.
That you were just instantly in
right. It translates to a chorus line pretty.
Oh, of course.
Pretty easily. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
I also had to sing Walk This Way, which they didn't change any lyrics to, and I don't really know why it was in there, but I sang it entirely in my head voice, which is just a fun fact. To
just
comment on the
head
quality.
Voice?
Yeah, because I couldn't sing
just
that
like
shit.
Like a boy soprano, just Walk This Way.
You're not far off the mark, bud.
Wow.
Yeah, it was good.
Now I need a video. I need to see.
I don't know if I have a video.
Someone's got to have that.
Oh, there was a Mambo Number 5 where he just, instead of girls' names, he sang body parts. It was pretty good.
Wait, that was your song too? Oh, no,
that
was
that
a
was
character
Dr.
name?
Funkenstein. That was an audience participation
he was the lead.
Song. He was the lead, yeah. I was, although yeah. I had the late star arrival. So
sure.
It depends on how you want to.
Sure. You were the King George
That's right. The bit part.
Of the, what was it called? The late night shift?
Graveyard shift. And it took place in a graveyard in June. I think it must have been very confusing for the audience. I can't imagine walking into that, you know, late May and just everyone's like...
Everyone's dead and you're pieces of a person stitched together?
Yeah, Patch.
That is so sick.
And then I fall in love with Medusa and we do something called the love shock, you know.
Like Love Shack?
Just like it.
Now,
but it's a shock machine.
Affiliated with Kids Bop?
No.
This feels very similar.
But also with lyric changes, that is sort of a through line in my career, is popular music with slight lyric changes to suit the audience.
When I was in high school, I was Raggedy Andy for 3 Christmases in a row.
Where was this?
Tower City. It was Tower City, downtown Cleveland.
Yeah.
They still have Raggedy Ann and Andy every Christmas at Tower City.
What would you do?
People have taken pictures. They must be using the same costume that I wore 20 years ago. And that is filthy.
Yeah, that's not great. Not ideal.
I mean, you know, we would like play with kids.
Oh, it was just sort of an experiential thing. People could come in.
There was, I think we had like a show every hour where there was like a voiceover and we would pretend we were talking.
Uh-huh.
But we didn't like have lines or anything.
How old were you at this point?
I think I was like 15, 16, 17.
So old enough to know exactly what you're doing.
to know how sad it was. And also, I once had a dress as a dinosaur, where the head and everything, and I started dancing with a little girl. Mm-hmm. Who was probably like 4 or 5, and she was like, "I love you, dinosaur," and I'm like, "Okay, she's really cute," and I'm dancing, and I can't see her. I'm just holding on to her hand, and we're dancing, 5 minutes, 10 minutes pass, and I'm like, "I can't keep dancing with this little girl. I'm like getting sick, spinning in this circle," and all of a sudden, I hear this little girl go, "Dad, why is that dinosaur spinning in a circle by himself?" I wasn't holding on to her hands. I was holding on to myself.
To your own hands.
To my own dinosaur body, thinking that it was her hands. So I literally for 10 minutes just spun around in a circle, thinking I was giving a girl her life.
The chance of a lifetime.
Yeah. I kicked off my foot. I was doing a little dance and I kicked off my foot and there was like blood curdling screams from kids. That the dinosaurs.
I think I missed a step. Is this at the same event where there was also a Raggedy Ann and Andy?
Yes, because we changed seasons, unlike, you know, King's Island.
Seems like there's an implicit criticism there, and I don't care.
I mean, that's very strange that you guys had Halloween all year round. We had Christmas at Christmas. We're strange up in the north.
Okay, I was not in charge of programming. Please don't come to me with your criticisms.
In the summer, we had dinosaurs.
Oh, I see. That is very summer. That is a very summer-themed costume. Dinosaur.
Absolutely.
Dinosaurs only existed in the summer. Known fact.
It's true. Before the asteroid.
Right.
So, we, as actors, we do have to do a lot of crazy things to experience our craft early on.
Sure.
And clearly, we were both... inspired by Patches, by Raggedy Andy.
It was just Patch, and you keep doing that. It seems a little disrespectful.
Good.
Raggedy Andy's, I guess.
I mean, I guess in a way we were pretty much the same character.
Yeah, we kind of were.
That's interesting.
Did you have a second number star entrance?
I didn't have a first number.
Ah, exactly. They didn't put you together during the first number, did they? That was the main plot point, was putting Patch together.
I mean, what else was there narratively? It doesn't seem like anything else was going on.
Well, Love Shock, as I mentioned. And then Love Shock kills us, and she has to bring us back to life with Cher's Do You Believe in Love After Life, you see?
No.
Yep.
No.
See how they changed that around? And the finale was Prince's Let's Get Crazy with no lyric changes. Just a nice celebratory Let's Get Crazy, Let's Get Nuts.
Well, good, because that would be sacrilegious.
Exactly.
This
they did
insane.
Do Queen of the Night, but changed it to Queen of the Fright, even though Queen of the Night already suits the theme. I can't imagine that's for licensing, because they're not getting any of that licensed.
No. No, someone's going to have a lawsuit on King's Island after this podcast.
After this, after the world knows.
Wow. Okay, so I'm so glad that at least... 10 minutes of our discussion has been based on the King's Island theme park entertainment.
Well, it was a rich teenage couple of years there for me. And I mean, honestly, all jokes aside, that was the only exposure I had to the performing arts, especially as a profession. We were just not an especially cultured family, and you know, Sensatucky's not an especially cultured area, so there was no conversation of lessons or, you know, regional theater or anything like that until I started doing that. And I did the school plays and stuff, but that was about it. So that was sort of a transition point for me, I think.
Right. Well, now you make me feel bad for making fun of
that. How
dare
you
lifeline.
Insult the only good thing that ever happened to me.
Okay. So you get but that's a big leap. You go to University of Michigan.
Yeah. Oh, so a lot of the people who worked at the park were on their summer vacations from, you know, well known institutions. And some of them actually would do winters in Branson or other areas where there's year round entertainment. And so a lot of the people in the shows with me is sort of a transitional time for the park. And so a lot of people were in their 30s. They were like well-trodden professionals who had been just hustling through the theme park and regional theater circuit for their 20s and 30s. And so I think it started to dawn on me that this was something you could actually make a life doing. And then some of the people at the park, you know, told me about the auditions for their school. So I went and auditioned for a bunch of schools. Didn't get into very many, which seems strange because of all of my training doing Patch. But one of them gave me a song. I didn't know any music theater songs. It was so embarrassing.
But you got into University of Michigan.
I know. I mean, so University of Michigan is one of those, you know, I fucking love them because it's one of those potential schools. They're not looking for super polished, although that may have changed now because it's, you know, now there's like a YouTube submission portion and then they do a cut off of YouTube and then they invite certain people to come in after that.
Oh, I didn't know
I would
that.
Have never gotten in if I had to do it now. But at that point, it was, they were really, really gracious and really encouraging and kind of saw something in me that I don't even think I saw in myself, which is, that's it, man. That was the
potential.
The key. Yeah. And so then,
So you—that's where you got your dance training. I'm sorry, just because dancing is such a thing that has, you know, eluded me in my career. It's such a thing that I find so fascinating. I can't imagine like not having any training and going to University of Michigan and coming out and being able to go into How to Succeed on Broadway and do the kind of dancing that you did, which was insane.
Yeah, it's funny because my background, I have never felt incredibly confident as a dancer, even in all of those chapters when I was doing Chorus Line or doing a Rob Ashford show, which is obviously especially dance heavy.
Right.
So there, you know, there's some part of me that was just sort of intrinsically rhythmic. I could get that part of it, and I'm kind of a good mimic. And I was always I always did sports, so I was always kind of athletic. So I could piece together some parts of it, but the foundation wasn't there. The sort of the structural part of it was never there. So it was always me asking my body to do something that it didn't really want to do, which I think is also part of why the transition was a little easier for me, because it really did take a toll on my body, and it really I was really overexerting myself. I was asking way too much of my poor knees that didn't want to turn out. They didn't want to turn out.
That is literally the best description that I could use for myself of why I'm not a good dancer. It's asking my body to do something that it does not want to do.
Yeah, your brain can figure it out, but your body is like, what the fuck, dude?
Yeah, sit down.
Yeah, enough.
Why are you moving like this? This is abnormal. Like, it fights me.
Yeah.
Always. Okay, so you go and you're on the tour of Wicked, you're on the tour of A Chorus Line, mm-hmm. you come back, you do How to Succeed. Am I skipping something there?
Yeah, I went into, what did I do? Oh, I did a Cyrano de Bergerac adaptation called Calvin Berger that Kathleen Marshall directed. Man, that seemed like a fancy freaking gig.
Yeah.
Time. I don't know what
like a sure thing.
Yeah, for sure. That was a George Street, which is a cool little playhouse in New Jersey. I did that for a little bit. And then Wicked, because I had done the tour, asked me to come into the New York company while I was doing that.
I see.
So I jumped into that for a little bit. And then, I don't know. I think I did Saved. Remember when they did the musical of Saved?
Oh, yeah.
They took that down to Kansas. They did it off Broadway, and then they took it down to Kansas City Rep to try and give it another go, revamp it a little bit. That was when I worked with Felicia Finley, and we found out that we're maybe distant cousins because we have the same like Appalachian hillbilly ancestors.
I love that.
Yeah, she's the best. When we were doing, where were we? Goodspeed. She lived downstairs from me, and she'd be like having a whiskey and Coke, but it was in the days of Coke Plus. Do you remember this? And they had like Coke Plus vitamins. So her argument would always be like, you know, you can have the drink because it's plus vitamins.
So it's basically, it's healthy. It's a health drink. Yeah. It's basically a kale smoothie. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
No, that summer was so much fun.
So
the
much
good
fun.
Speed.
I loved it there. We were there for a long time, a lot longer than you guys were, I think, but it was
fine. Well, yes and no, because you guys were there for a season. So you were probably like there for 4 or 5 months.
Yeah. But you had done one of those before, hadn't you? at Goodspeed?
No, I'd never been there until that summer. Oh. But then we did it that summer at their, New Works stage.
Right.
While you guys were at the main stage. And then we came back. We did it at the Paper Mill. And then we came back and did it in the season. So I was at the Goodspeed for 6 months.
Oh,
that year.
You brought it back to the main stage?
Yes.
Whoa.
Yeah, then we came back and did it on the main stage. So I was in East Haddam, Connecticut, at the Goodspeed Opera House.
Chilling by that swing bridge.
There's nothing to do, but it's beautiful.
It is.
And
it is.
It's like going on a retreat with just a bunch of performers and
Six months is
artists.
A big ask, but yeah, it is.
It's a lot.
I didn't get sick of it.
You what?
I didn't get sick of it really over the. I mean, I was only there for four. Six is a lot.
It was a lot, but I had a car for.
So you go back to the city?
4 months. I was going back to the city. And that's actually, to be honest, like just to tell the short story of like why I'm so glad I went back is that I had been doing Happy Days for like years for Gary Marshall.
Yeah.
And the last time I was like, Gary, I don't think I can do this for another 4 months. I've already done it. I think I need to move on to do something else other than Richie Cunningham, which I'd been doing for like 4 years at that
right,
point.
Right.
And he was like, you'll come, you'll do it. It'll be great. We'll have one more shot at it, And he's like, and I remember like really making this big decision, like, okay, I'll go, I'll do it. I'll bring a car. It'll be fun. And I showed up that summer and someone in the ensemble, Zach Frank, we were going back to New York every week. And I was giving him rides back into the city for the day off. And he said, you should meet my friend who I went to college with, Gerald Schroeder. I think you guys would really hit it off. My husband.
Oh,
and that's how I met him. And if I had not said yes to doing that show.
I didn't know that.
I never would have met my husband.
Is he still out here?
Yes, I brought him to Los Angeles.
Yep, and then you abandoned him
immediately.
Immediately,
which is the best way to keep a marriage going.
Yeah, yeah.
I moved him out to LA after we got married, and I did that series, 10 episodes with Kelsey Grammer and Martin Lawrence.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, we're going to LA live in. You'll love it out here. And moved him out there. My show falls apart,
yep.
And he gets a great job. And so I thought I was just going to, get pregnant and we were going to be doing the California thing.
Yeah.
But then Hamilton called and
I just
left him. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. And we've been making it work all year. So he's still there. I'm in San Francisco and by August I'll be back.
Hey.
In LA. Hey.
Are you staying here after it moves on or are you staying on the road?
This is the edited portion of the podcast.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. I forgot.
I forgot
what we were doing.
No, the truth is, no, I don't even know. I'll decide if I'll take this out or not. We don't know. We don't know. It's like a year ago I was in a musical called Nerds in New York.
Right.
And so we can't, well, it is. It's a bummer, but it's also like why I'm in Hamilton.
Yeah.
So I don't think that I can figure out exactly what I'll be doing a month from now, let alone at the end of the year. Because
right.
The show Hamilton will be there until January 1st, 2018. So I can guarantee that I'll be enjoying
it. It's in LA until January 1st?
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. No, we're going to be there for 5 months.
Oh, that's awesome. Are you in San Fran for that long?
Yeah, we've been here 3 months and we'll be going to we'll be here till August 5th.
Ah.
So yeah, I mean it's been great to like really get to enjoy San Francisco and go to Los Angeles, and I think everyone in the cast is really excited to get to LA too and kind of see that side of the business. It's nice, just like you went with Vanya, Sonia, Masha, and Spike to go with the show, to go with the thing that you can do well and be seen in that city.
And it's fun to go with a show that is hyped and well received and that a lot of people are going to come see and
that they maybe didn't get a chance to check out in New York.
Right. And you can, if you meet people out when that's a great name to drop.
What, Hamilton?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
That's like,
it'll get you fast food.
Yeah.
That's so far I've utilized it at fast food restaurants to get an extra side of fries.
They gave you free fries?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. I know. I mean,
I didn't realize it was
honestly,
that powerful.
It doesn't get better than that. It's very powerful. No, we're really excited to be there. And, you know, I love Los Angeles. What are your thoughts about the city itself? It's very different from New York.
Yeah.
A lot of New Yorkers come there and they have a love-hate relationship with it.
Yeah.
What are the pros and the cons of it for you?
I don't think I'm going to bring anything mind-blowing to this conversation, but yeah, it's just, it's a terribly inefficient town with a lot of pockets of secrecy. So you know, you just do a lot of isolation and a lot of wondering what else is going on outside of whatever pod you're confined to.
Right.
And there's not a
pockets
lot of
pockets of secrecy. That sounds like you're running with the CIA out there.
Yeah, pretty high stakes life I lead out here.
Wow.
No, you know what I mean. It's just like there's always something going on behind closed doors. I feel like New York has this really cool environment where everyone from every walk of life, from every economic profile, still shuffles into the subway and somehow occupies the same space. And because of that, there's such a community and you run into people you know all the time. And there's, you know, that city has boundless surprises in store. And this one is not like that. You won't see anybody unless you've made a plan 2 weeks in advance and canceled twice and rescheduled and then you finally run into each other.
But you have been a very big advocate, or at least putting on social media, of the public transportation in Los Angeles.
I appreciate that
you've
noticed.
Oh, I'm watching you.
Yeah,
I know what's going on.
I think it must be exhausting. My friends have had about enough of it. But but yeah, I love it. I take the train. I only bike and train. I got rid of my car. I have a 1971 pickup truck, but it's, you know, gas is, I'm worried about the environment, so I'm trying not to drive that very frequently. And also, it's 50 years old, so it doesn't really want to drive. I can't valet it. It's hard to park. So anyway, I basically just bike and take the train pretty much everywhere, or Uber if it's a particularly tricky journey.
Sure. Which is that has really changed Los Angeles, because I lived in LA in 2003 to 2006, and you know, you couldn't take cabs anywhere. When you're in a situation in LA now, you just get a Lyft or Uber,
and it's cheap. It's cheaper than cabs.
It's way cheaper than New York.
Sometimes I'll look, and the train's $1.25, which is insane, first of all, and it's pretty comprehensive. And I don't want to get on the pedestal for too long, but it is. Comprehensive and getting more comprehensive, and they're spending money on that infrastructure, and they're petitioning for the Olympics in another decade, so they're building even more as an effort to say, look how easy it is to get around everywhere. So they're building a line on Wilshire all the way out to the beach, and right now they have one on Exposition that goes all the way out to the beach, and if they get one that crosses those two, you can get anywhere in this town. I mean, you have to Uber on either side or bike on either side, but
yeah,
there are options
once you get there.
And there didn't used to be options, as you're saying. I remember the first time I was out here, we tried to take a cab from Hollywood to Santa Monica, and we were on Santa Monica Boulevard going out past that Mormon, Mormon church that's on?
The Mormon temple.
Yeah, the temple right there.
On Santa Monica, it's huge.
And I had $30 in my pocket, and I thought that would be plenty, obviously, and $30 hit at that Mormon church. It was pouring down rain for, you know, that never happens in LA. So we
just
had,
in this situation.
Yeah, so we had to get out at the $30 mark and run for a payphone, because they still had those, and call a friend had to come pick us up, because we couldn't even make it from Hollywood to San Marcos. Anyway,
You're going to have to tell me. I want to know all the details of the train situation, because I need to figure out how to get from where I live, which I won't reveal here, to the Pantages Theater. That's right. But, you know, I want to know. I want to know. Gerald and I share a car.
Yeah.
Just tweet out my phone number and address. It's all good.
Okay. You're not going to like it. There is a way from where you live to the Pantages, but it's not especially efficient.
It takes a long time.
It takes two trains, and you got to go through downtown.
Right.
But if you're up for the bus, there are a lot of options.
All right. I'm up for anything. I'm going to get a bike.
Get a bike.
I'm gonna get creative.
Have bike racks on the front. You can just throw it on there. You go sit. Someone drives you. Traffic doesn't matter. You can read, you know, about our challenging political climate or whatever you care to read about.
Great segue, because I just want to talk to you a little bit about our political climate.
Please.
Just in the sense of, like, how you've been responding to it as an artist. And I think that you really have put yourself out there. You know, I don't like to get too much into the weeds.
Yeah.
Because I need this as an escape from all that.
Right, right.
But I think it's really important to talk about it as an actor and like why it's important to you to be vocal.
Yeah.
Right now in this time in history.
You know, I have a little bit of a hard time being especially vocal too, because I feel like there's so much uncertainty. There's so much that I don't know. It's really hard for me to feel like I can stand on some precipice and speak the truth when I, you know, none of us, even the most educated among us, are not especially well informed on. And I mean, day to day, it's like an entirely new narrative coming out
every day.
Every day, it's insane, and it's really hard to track, and it's frustrating, and it doesn't feel like we have a lot of honesty, and it doesn't feel like we have a lot of integrity. And you can control your sources, but I think the reason being vocal is important is because there are people in all of these communities. If I am vocal about anything, I try to make it in a positive light, something advocating something that benefits humanity, or insisting that some organization that is, you know, particularly involved in some aspect of this and the benefit of that organization or what they're doing
right.
for the good of mankind, as opposed to just trashing politicians or tearing down people, even though that's a ripe premise, as we know. But like I said, there's a lot of uncertainty, so I'm not super comfortable doing that. And I don't think that people who disagree with me ideologically respond very well to that. I think we know that.
Right.
You're from Ohio. Right. I'm from Ohio. I know that my family is particularly defiant and particularly stubborn, and especially if I start spouting off something that I read on Politico or in The Economist or something, right. They just roll their eyes and walk away from it. They won't listen to me. So I think by virtue of being a little more positive, a little more inclusive, that maybe right. we could start to have conversations, because I do know that if we just cling to the people who agree with us and huddle in our corners and point fingers at the other side and say, you guys are morons, and they do the same to us, then I'm not sure what growth can really come of that.
I think that comes from us being from the Midwest and then going out to New York yeah. and LA. Yeah. And, you know, there's a view of both, you know, Midwest folks and also of people on the coast that is just like wrong.
Yeah.
So a lot of times you're like, you just need to listen to each other, that you are not that different from each other.
Right.
A lot of times I'm just heartbroken that there's just a lot of the talking past
right.
each other.
I mean, it is a kind of curious instance where it'd be one thing if we were having arguments about policy or about, I mean, this isn't anything revelatory, but if we were having arguments about policy, it'd be one thing, but we're having arguments about what is true and what is untrue on completely parallel universes. So we're not arguing right. a specific issue. We're arguing the foundational information that supports that issue and whether or not that's even true, which is an insane time to try and have a conversation with someone whose ideas are different from your own. But like you say, I think if we can appeal to goodness in humans and the fact that we all want what's best. I think we know that deep down. We all want, from any side of the aisle, we want the best thing, and everyone wants that. So
right.
we may it's have different ideas about how to get there, but I think if we can agree on that at least and not villainize each other so much, there might be some progress to be made.
Well, one of the best days I've ever had in Los Angeles was the day of the Women's March.
Yeah.
And you're going to like this because
you took the train.
Took the train.
Hey.
I took that train.
That was mayhem. Did you take the red line?
Yes. Wait. Yeah, that's what I would have taken, right?
From the valley? Oh, no. From where you were. I got you.
Yeah, that's fine. No. My mom listens to this. That's
yeah. So, top secret. Your secret's safe with me, bud.
I got. We had to get on the train, Gerald and I and all of our friends uh-huh. who were going down there. We were going to go downtown. Well, we had to get on the train and go all the way to Santa Monica and then come back.
End of the line.
Because there were so many people on those trains. Just to get on the metro was insane. It yeah. was
the same truly, was true. Like, I was coming from the valley, but the same was true that we had to go to the end of the line and take it back. And at one point they cut off access to it because there were, it just inundated the system. No one had any idea it was going to be bad.
Yeah, I know. You're like defending. You're like,
yeah. No, it's not their fault. It's not their fault. They did everything right.
No, it's true. They no one has ever. I would be shocked if anyone, if LA has ever had a day that more people use public transportation.
I can't imagine.
There were 750,000 people downtown, and 90% of them came through public transportation.
Wasn't that thrilling though?
It was one of the greatest days of my life just to see humanity coming together.
Same.
And it was pretty quiet.
Yeah.
You know, like it just felt like it was so necessary and important.
It's so funny coming from New York, which is so crowded, but everyone obviously in New York is in, you know, very sure-footed and will completely throw you into the street if you're in their way. It was very cool to look at an environment that could have easily turned riotous and gotten very dangerous, and lots of people could have gotten hurt, and it really could have been worst case scenario at almost any turn.
When there's hundreds of thousands of people.
We got off the train and they couldn't even do the march because it was just, it was as far as the eye could see in any direction, it was shoulder to shoulder. And had anything gone awry, that would have turned into mayhem immediately. And it was really encouraging that everyone was so positive. You bump into somebody and they, instead of turning around and getting pissed at you, were just like, you know, looking to relate, which was, I walked around with a smile on my face that entire day, even though it was worst case scenario for anybody who doesn't want to, you know, stand shoulder to shoulder in a massive crowd and have no idea what's going on.
Right. But I will say one of my favorite parts of it was riding the train for the hour and a half, 2 hours that we were on there, and just getting to talk to strangers in Los Angeles, something that's very rare.
Doesn't happen.
And, you know, so all right, let's have a conversation about public transportation in LA, and you're going to get me to Hamilton at the Pantages.
Brings people together, man.
On the public transportation. All right. Thank you so much for talking with
Thanks for having me.
You know, I think it's pretty clear now that we've had this conversation to everyone listening, like why I wanted to have you on. And I think that your story, it's all about Patch.
Yeah.
That's what I wanted to know about.
I'm glad, I'm glad we aired that because it needed to be told.
All right. So I'm going to now go and look on YouTube for any kind of footage I can find.
No such thing, because this was early, bud. This was 99. 2000,
hey,
maybe.
You never know. You never know. People are uploading stuff from the past.
That's true. There could be a VHS come to haunt me.
That's right. We'll find it. Thank you so much for doing this.
Thanks.
I hope to see you soon when I get to LA.
Yeah, see you in a couple months.
All right.
Bye, Roars.
Audition, side job, swimming upstream. Believe it or not, you're living the dream.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.
If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.